The time of 1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the April 6, 2021 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order. Members, hopefully everyone had a good break, time to relax a little bit and be with family. And with that, Ms. Griska, if you would please take the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Liz Lagarde, present. David. David. Agbaje.
Present.
Agbaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo, excused. Gomez.
Present.
Gomez, present. Her.
Okay.
Her, present. Hertas. Hertas. Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. McDonald. McDonald. Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins. Robbins. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swazinski. Swazinski. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Davids. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. McDonald. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Swazinski. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. We do have a quorum. We have the March 25th, 2021 minutes to approve. Representative Liz Lagarde, would you like to move those minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liz Lagarde moves approval of the March 25th, 2021 minutes. Any discussion, thoughts on that? Okay. If not, I'm going to call for the vote and ask members to momentarily unmute themselves. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay.
Aye.
Motion does prevail. And the March 25th, 2021 minutes are approved. And I do see Representative David's hand is raised. And I think he's present.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was unable to connect, so now I'm on and I am present. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. So, members, here is, let me give you the schedule. Today we're going to be doing the walkthrough on House File 991, which is the House Omnibus Tax Bill, and just a schedule for the week. So today we're going to do the walkthrough. Staff will do the walkthrough of the bill. On Wednesday, we're going to have testimony on House File 991. And then on Thursday, we will move the DE1 amendment. So we're not going to move anything today or Wednesday, but on Thursday, we will move the bill or the DE1 amendment to House File 991. And then there will also be an author's amendment, and then all other amendments will be entertained and also plenty of discussion. So we begin all the meetings at 1 p.m., the one on Thursday, we can go until 5 p.m., so we're going to have plenty of time to mark up the bill and have discussion and comments on the bill. And then on Friday, we will also meet at 1 p.m. We'll do the education bill, transportation bill, the political contribution refund, there's a bill that deals with that, and then three vehicle bills, a couple in transportation and one in taxes. And so today, as I said, we're like to give some introductory comments on House File 991. And first of all, a big, huge thank you to the staff. These things, these bills do not come together to fruition without the great help and work of staff. So House nonpartisan research staff, the House fiscal staff, our House partisan staff, thank you so much for all of your work in putting this bill together. And at a later date, I'll identify you individually. Also, a big thank you to Chair Joachim and her committee for the Property Tax Division report, and Republican Lee Hertaus for your work on that report. And also a thank you to the Tax Committee members, and also to Republican lead Representative Davids for all the discussion and all the work. And I thought all the comments that were made and put together, it is a bipartisan bill. I was going through it this morning, and I counted, I think, at least 29 individual Republican provisions in the bill. So that is good. And so, members, in the last year, COVID-19 has, you know, impacted all of our lives, and it's really hit a lot of families and workers and small businesses in Minnesota. And, you know, a lot of the statistics bear that out. You know, the most recent Deed economic report in February says we still lost 213,000 jobs from February of 2020 to February of 2021. Unemployment insurance benefits in April of 2020, it hit a peak of just a hair over 500,000 claims. And in February, just a couple of months ago, we still have 123,000 claims on unemployment insurance. And we know it's hit individuals and businesses disproportionately. You know, 57% of those folks who received unemployment insurance represented the bottom 40% of our income levels. And we know the leisure and hospitality industry has been hit by far the hardest. 68,000 jobs still down, about a third of the total jobs lost in just that sector, 26%. And so a top goal of this tax committee and of a bill that we were to put together was to be not only be able to help our families and our workers and our small businesses recover from COVID-19, but also provide the opportunities so that we can all be better and stronger into the future. And so we need to get people back on their feet. We've got to get the economy chugging on all cylinders. And this tax bill does that. It provides over $1 billion of tax cuts and aids to our families, our workers, and our small businesses that were hit the hardest. And we do that by strengthening our tax code. We strengthen our tax code by leveling the playing field and creating more tax fairness for our taxpayers, especially our families and small businesses. And members, I know on the other side of the aisle, there's going to be a few areas in this bill that are going to create some heartburn. And I know it's going to be in the tax revenue areas. So I just wanted to spend just a minute just to talk about this. So there's two primary revenue raisers that allow us to provide, that pays for the tax cuts and the aids that go out. And the one is a fifth tier, a new fifth tier on the income tax. 1.3% rate increase for married joint filers over $1 million and individuals making $500,000 or more. And, you know, something this time around was really unique, historically unique from other economic downturns, if you will. normally what happens in an economic downturn is that the income disparity actually narrows. But what we've seen with COVID-19 is that the income disparity actually got wider, primarily because the stock up market, even though it dipped way down in later March, it had recovered by August and is doing much better even now. That's probably one of the biggest reasons. But also a lot of people on the front line who sacrificed, and our small businesses that a lot were closed during the pandemic, their sacrifice made for a safer and healthier state that helped those who did well to do well. Their sacrifice helped make that happen. And the other big revenue raiser in here is ending profit shifting by multinational corporations. And very simply, this just uses a tool that global intangible low tax income uses a tool that was passed by a Republican Congress and passed by President Trump that says we're going to end this profit shifting. We're going to bring profits earned in Minnesota but are shifted to other countries by multinational corporations, bring those back to Minnesota. And this, by allowing this profit shifting, has really created a huge disadvantage for small businesses. And, you know, our Main Street businesses are not able to take advantage of profit shifting to Bermuda and the Cayman Islands. And so their largest competitors should not be able to do that either. And so this really creates kind of fairness. And I, just to get an idea, I want you to think, members, about this, that think about the families in your district. Think about those small businesses hit hardest by COVID-19, our restaurants, our bars, our fitness centers, and so forth. Think about those folks. And, you know, if they're not a multinational corporation shifting profits, or if they didn't make over $1 million this year, they will not pay these taxes. They won't pay those taxes, but they will see the benefits of this bill. And so as you hear the staff kind of outline things, keep that in perspective. And just very quickly, I want to go over a couple of highlights in the bill. For families and workers, we do the subtraction on unemployment insurance, the first $10,200 of income earned through the unemployment insurance benefits will be subtracted. That's about $260 million of a tax cut. The working family credit, about $60 million of tax cuts to working families. There's housing aid for the homeless, for affordable housing, homelessness prevention, $55 million, and about $30 million of direct property tax cuts to the homeowners and renters refunds. On the business side, we conform to the PPP loan exclusion up to $350,000 per loan. That will completely exclude over 90% of all the loans, and that's about $240 million. There also is a county business relief aid of almost $70 billion, and that's going to get to those businesses that we've talked about. We're not leaving anyone behind. It's going to get to those businesses that didn't get maybe a PPP loan or isn't going to directly benefit this year because they lost money or whatever that might be. And the counties have done an excellent job of getting that money out there. They've already done that twice before, and we send it through the same mechanism out to our counties. Also, there's a sales tax exemption for restaurants that purchased equipment in 2020 or 2021 to meet health guidelines, PPE equipment, shields, and so forth. And finally, there's a property tax cut on the CI property tax levy where now the market value exclusion would go from $100,000 to $150,000. So those are some highlights. You're going to hear more, but just keep in mind in your district, you know, what is the impact on those folks who were hit by COVID-19? And so I think this bill meets those goals of being able to help our families, our workers, our small businesses recover from COVID-19, but also kind of set the table so that they can be better and stronger into the future. And so with that, what I'd like to do is have staff go over the bill. And we've got this broken up into the staff has about kind of five different areas. And so what I'd like to do is we'll start out with Articles 1, 2, and 3. And that's going to be Mr. Williams and Mr. Klayman. And if you can, members, hold your questions until kind of after we're done with each block. And then we'll open it up to all questions and so forth. But we kind of thought this would kind of five different blocks might be the best way to organize things. And so we'll go with that. So just write down your questions and then come back and we'll answer those as we go. So with that, Mr. Williams, I think you're going to start with Article 1.
Chair Marquardt and members, I'm going to start with Article 1. As Chair Marquardt mentioned, that's the federal conformity article. The article would update the state tax code to adopt changes to the federal internal revenue code that were incorporated through December 31st, 2020. So there's actually five federal acts that we're picking up. The Further Consolidated Appropriations Act, 2020, that was from December 2019. The Families First Coronavirus Response Act, that was enacted in March of last year. Then the CARES Act, which was also enacted in March of last year. There's the Paycheck Protection Program and Healthcare Enhancement Act, which was enacted in April that related to PPP. And then the Consolidated Appropriations Act that was enacted last December. The bill generally adopts the changes in those federal acts. It does not include all of the changes that were part of the Federal American Rescue Plan Act that was passed last month. There is one change from that act that we included. I'll mention later. We generally conform, or the bill generally conforms to those provisions. There's a few exceptions. As Chair Marquardt mentioned, for the Federal Paycheck Protection Program, the bill does require an addition for associated expenses in excess of $350,000 per loan. The bill does not conform to the federal deduction, 100% deduction for business meals. So there's an addition required for that. That's a temporary federal provision. There's three federal credits that increase state tax liability, the employee retention credit, the payroll credit for sick leave, and the payroll credit for family leave. The bill does not conform to those changes, so there's temporary subtractions provided. And then the federal provisions temporarily allowing charitable contributions in excess of 60% of the federal contribution base, which is adjusted gross income for most taxpayers. The bill also conforms to two additional changes that aren't sort of directly adopted. So that's the subtraction for unemployment compensation. It's up to $10,200 in UI compensation in tax year 2020. It's only allowed for taxpayers with AGI of less than $150,000. It matches the provisions that were in the Federal American Rescue Plan Act. And for tax year 2020, the bill includes language that sort of matches a federal provision related to the earned income credit. It essentially allows taxpayers to use their 2019 earned income to qualify for the Minnesota Working Family Credit. So there's also sort of two categories of changes that the bill does not conform to that were enacted in the CARES Act. The first is net operating loss changes, both general net operating losses and also the federal excess business loss limit for pass-through entities. The bill does not pick up the changes allowing those to be carried back and delaying the implementation of the excess business loss deduction. We sort of temporarily decouple with the federal net operating loss rules for individuals. And so in those cases, those individuals will sort of get a delayed net operating loss subtraction for the amounts that they carried back under CARES or in amounts that were allowed federally but not allowed for state purposes because we still had the excess business loss rules on the books. There's sort of a similar treatment provided for the business interest limit deduction that was extended under CARES. So there's sort of a gap between the federal and state business interest limitation. So the state is going to stay on the TCJA 30% business interest limitation while CARES provided a 50% business interest limitation. So because they got a bigger federal deduction under CARES, they're getting a carried forward state deduction for state purposes. And that's sort of decouples us on business interest temporarily until they've used all of those delayed business interest subtractions. I'm not going to go through each of the provisions we're picking up through conformity. We've had quite a bit of conversation on that in committee this year. But if you look at the page 3 of your House research summary, there's a table of all the provisions that we are adopting. So I'm going to sort of save you the time of walking through that. And I'm not going to go through section by section because I've sort of discussed the substantive changes that are included in this article. So for there, I'm going to hand it off to my colleague, Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to go through Article 2 in the Omnibus Tax Bill. And beginning with Sections 1 and 2, this is the beginning farmer provision, allowing intrafamily sales to qualify for the credit. In addition, this also provides an increased credit rate for certain socially disadvantaged farmers. And there's also a rural finance appropriation to create an online application system for that credit as well. Sections 3 and 4 are related to the Small Business Investment Credit, also known as the Angel Credit. And this allocates $10 million to that credit for tax years in 2022. And then also does some conforming changes to the Angel Credit and current law on the sunset as a result. Section 5 establishes the Film Production Credit at a $10 million per year allocation level. And this would allow eligible production costs for films in Minnesota for 4 years, beginning in tax year 2021. And this particular provision also allows those credits to be assigned. Section 6 is just a conforming change from the governor's bill related to a couple provisions that we'll get to later regarding actual cash repatriations and the domestic production activities deduction. Section 7 is the pass-through entity tax. This was heard in this committee. This is similar to the C option bill that was has been heard in this committee in prior years. Essentially, what this bill does is it would allow a partnership or other pass-through entity to elect to file and pay a tax at the entity level. And then that individual owner of that pass-through entity would qualify for a refundable credit equal to their amount of tax liability as calculated under the pass-through entity tax. And this is designed to be a workaround to the federal SALT deduction cap. Section 8 relates to the working family credit and allows ITINs to be used for the working family credit instead of Social Security numbers in certain situations. Section 9 is from the governor's bill. This was a change to the definition of resident trust. This is made in response to certain constitutional decisions at the state and the federal level that have happened with regard to due process nexus issues with those trusts. Section 10 clarifies the state itemized deduction for non-business losses. Section 11, this is another provision from the governor's bill. This relates to actual cash repatriations or deferred actual cash repatriations. Essentially, this is these are dividends that are repatriated that are related to income on which tax has already been paid through either guilty or deemed repatriation. And so when it flows through at the federal level, there's a subtraction for an exclusion for that income so it's not double taxed. In Minnesota, of course, you get a state subtraction for guilty and deemed repatriation. And so this would provide an addition for those dividends when they're actually repatriated to a domestic shareholder in the United States. Section 12 is the addition for domestic production activities deduction. Again, this is a provision from the governor's bill. And this relates to the 2019 tax bill and this federal double tax benefit that was inadvertently provided called the grain glitch. And this brings back in modified form an addition for a domestic production activities deduction, which existed in the state of Minnesota prior to 2019. Sections 13 and 14 are just technical and cleanup provisions from the 2019 tax bill in the international tax area, again, from the governor's bill. Sections 15 and 16 are similar to the actual cash and domestic production activities deduction addition for individuals. They're just for corporations. Section 17, again, this is just more technical cleanup. Section 18 is the new fifth tier. That Chair Marquardt described at $1,500,000 and then $750,000 bracket levels. Section 19, this is just a statutory year change for individual bracket inflation. Section 20, this again relates to the pass-through entity tax. This just clarifies that an LLC that makes payments to other states can also receive the credit for taxes paid to other states, or the individual owners can. Section 21, this is another provision relating to the film credit. This also provides for a five-year carry forward of the credit if it can't all be used in the taxable year in which it's claimed. Section 22 is also related to the pass-through entity tax. This just provides the individual refundable credit for the tax. So this is what allows that tax to be revenue neutral. Then sections 23 through 25 relate to the working family credit. Section 23 relates to the use of an I-10 to claim the credit. It also increases the credit rate for taxpayers who do not have children. Section 24 allows children without Social Security numbers to be accounted for as qualifying children for the credit. And then Section 25 just makes a statutory year change for the inflation adjustment. Section 26 is a conforming change due to the domestic production activity deduction addition previously described. This is for the education credit. Section 27 is the historic structure credit extension, and that extends the credit by 8 years. Section 28 is the student loan credit. This adds Social Security income to the definition of income related to the credit, and also changes, which would have the effect of changing the allocation between couples and also affect eligibility for certain individuals. It also makes the credit refundable. Sections 29 and 30 relate to the credit for parents of stillborn children. This clarifies a variety of definitions and eliminates the dependent test. In addition, it addresses certain documentation requirements, including those related to a situation where an individual who gave birth is not a parent who's listed on the birth certificate. Section 31 are just some conforming changes to the individual AMT that are related to the additions and subtractions found throughout the rest of the bill. Sections 32 through 34, these are the provisions related to the treatment of certain controlled foreign corporations that generate GILTI for domestic shareholders. This is the provision that would pull these controlled foreign corporations into the unitary group. This would also allow foreign corporations to elect worldwide combined reporting if they don't want to, or if they want to do that. Section 35 would treat the actual cash repatriations from the provision described earlier as dividends, and that would mean that they would be subject to the dividend received deduction. Sections 37 and 38 also relate to the pass-through entity tax that would provide exceptions to the withholding tax for electing entities under that tax. Section 39 is just another conforming change to the property tax refund that incorporating the domestic production activities deduction addition, the definition of income. Section 40 is again related to the film credit. This provides a film credit, the film production credit, under the premium tax for premium taxpayers. Section 41 is the Section 179 clarification, which allows full conformity for Section 179 carryforwards for property that was placed in service prior to 2020. And then Section 42 is the repealer section. Paragraph A just makes technical and clarifying changes, again related to the international provisions in the 2019 tax bill. And then also would repeal the current definition of the resident trust for resident trusts that's modified elsewhere in the bill. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 2, and then I think I'll move right on to Article 3, which is the partnership audit article.
That sounds good, Mr. Clayman. We'll do one more article, and then we'll open it up for questions. So, Mr. Clayman.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, Article 3 is the partnership audit article. I think this has come through the Taxes Committee a number of times in prior years, but essentially what the partnership audit article does is it establishes rules for reporting and paying partnership level audits and adjustments. This would allow a partnership level payment option for those adjustments at the state level. Would also require that the residency of direct partners is reported. It would require that tax on those adjustments is paid based on allocated and apportioned shares at the highest marginal rate for the partners in a partnership. It would also address tiered partnership structures and subject them to reporting and partnership pay provisions and elections. Mr. Chair, I won't go through all the sections of the partnership audit bill, but most of the sections, if you look at this article in the summary, most of the sections are just conforming sections. There are only a couple substantive sections in that particular article. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes the first block here of the omnibus tax bill walkthrough.
All right. Thank you very much. Are there any questions from members to this point? All right, I don't see any. Very good. So we're going to move to block two. Articles 4 and 5 will be covered by Ms. Hagler, and then we will open up for questions after articles 4 and 5. So, Ms. Hagler, thank you. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Article 4 contains the state sales and use tax provisions. All 21 sections in this article either amend existing exemptions or create new ones. So Section 1 creates an exemption for the extra price paid on season tickets to a college sporting event when the seats are in a preferred viewing location, so long as the extra price paid is separately stated and the revenue from the extra price goes to support student scholarships, wellness, and academic costs. Section 2 is the provision that restores the sales tax exemption on fundraising sales made by student groups, even if the funds are recorded as part of the school district revenue. This was in the governor's bill, but we also did hear it as a standalone bill, and makes that correction from the unintended consequence of the 2019 education bill. Section 3 creates an exemption for prepared food purchases by nonprofit organizations that provide food as their charitable mission through two federal programs. Section 4 extends by 1 year the construction materials exemption for the city of Minnetonka so that sales and purchases may be exempt through January 1st, 2022. And then Section 5 creates an exemption for construction materials used in the construction or remodeling of any public safety facility owned by a local government. Sections 6, 7, and 8 are also tied to the section and provide that the tax is paid upfront and then refunded by the Commissioner of Revenue. And over the course of the session, the committee heard many city-specific construction exemption bills, some of which would be covered by this broader general exemption. And I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get towards the end of the article. Section 9 extends the exemption for construction materials granted to the city of Melrose after a 2016 fire. And Section 10, likewise, grants an exemption to the city of Alexandria, also to cover recover from a fire, but this exemption also covers durable restaurant equipment and cleaning and disinfecting services. And then sections 11 through 18 provide city-specific construction exemptions for the cities of Buffalo, Hibbing, Maplewood, Marshall, Plymouth, Proctor, Virginia, and the Rockridge School area. I'll note that the date range for the provisions relating to public safety facilities are adjusted to end July 1, 2021, and that is because of the Section 5 broader general exemption that goes into effect July 1 of this year. So that affected the provisions for Buffalo, Maplewood, Plymouth, and Virginia. So that's why it looks a little bit different than how we heard it in committee. The committee also heard bills from the cities of Bloomington and St. Peter for construction materials to be used by fire stations. And because of the timing of the construction and the exemption, these cities would also fall under the broader Section 5 exemption, so there's no need for them to have their own special law provisions. Section 19 provides the construction exemption for materials used in improvements to the MSP airport. And in this instance, the tax is paid and refunds are applied for by the Airport Commission. Section 20 is the sales tax provision from the Promise Act, and it provides exemptions to small businesses, nonprofits, and low-income housing developments that were damaged and destroyed during the unrest last May and June. The exemption includes construction materials, replacement of capital equipment, and cleaning and disinfecting services. And then lastly, Section 21 provides an exemption for restaurants that the chair spoke of in his overview for materials, equipment, and supplies purchased to adapt to accommodate COVID-19 health guidelines. And the exemption is limited to $1,000 per employer identification number or Minnesota tax ID number for franchises that are part of a larger corporate entity. The exemption is limited to $1,000 per franchise location. And this exemption is limited to purchases made between October 1 of 2020 and through the end of this year. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 4, and I will move into Article 5.
Please proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 5 contains the provisions relating to vapor and tobacco taxes that were in the governor's budget bill. Section 1 creates a new definition of delivery sale in the tax chapter, and a delivery sale is a sale of tobacco products to a customer in Minnesota when the item is sold over the phone or online or by mail and is delivered to the customer in Minnesota by mail or other delivery service. And this definition conforms the tax chapter to the regulation chapter in 325F. Section 2 creates a definition of heat device that includes electronic vapor devices and their parts and accessories. Section 3 amends the definition of tobacco products to include the newly created term heat device from Section 2. And this inclusion then subjects those heat devices to the 95% wholesale tax imposed on tobacco products. Section 4 is a clarifying provision that adds commonly used terms for nicotine solution product devices to the definition in the tax chapter. Section 5 clarifies that any items within a kit that includes a nicotine solution is included in the wholesale sales price, and also clarifies that for any heating device sold as part of a kit, the wholesale price includes those component parts and accessories. Section 6 through 11 clarify that out-of-state retailers are subject to the state requirements, the same state requirements as in-state retailers when it comes to administration and collection and remittance of the tax. And lastly, Sections 12, 13, and 14 make conforming changes to Chapter 325 to align with the changes made by this article so that the regulation provisions and the tax provisions all say the same thing. So that concludes Article 5, and I can answer questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hagler. Any questions on Article 4, sales taxes, or Article 5, vapor and cigarette, tobacco taxes? All right, Ms. Hagler, thank you so much. We're going to move now to kind of the third block, if you will, members, and that's Articles 6, 7, and 8. We'll take those three, and then if you have questions, we will take those. So, Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, I will I'll begin with Article 6, which is the special taxes article, and you can find this on starting on page 32 of the summary. This article makes changes related to solid waste management taxes, the premium tax, and the production tax. So Section 1 of Article 6 clarifies that the solid waste tax for construction debris and industrial waste is 60 cents per cubic yard, and that the PCA must determine and publish weight-to-volume conversion schedules. Section 2 modifies the solid waste tax rate for self-haulers generating construction debris to match the rate for commercial generators,
which is 60 cents per cubic yard, and it also makes the same clarifying changes that were in Section 1. Section 3 increases the tax rate under the premium tax for surplus lines insurance purchased directly from an insurer from 2% up to 3%. The rate for purchases made through an agent is currently at 3%. And finally, Sections 4, 5, and 6 expand the types of iron ore-bearing material that are subject to the production tax so that these materials include the products of the new lump ore mining process. Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 6, and I will move on into Article 7, which is the property tax article.
Very good. Please proceed, Mr. Swanson.
Section 1 of Article 7 allows the Commissioner of Revenue to administer the renter's property tax refund for applicants who applied with an individual tax identification number, or ITIN. So this section, along with all or parts of Sections 2, 7 through 11, 15, and 23 of this article, would allow property owners to qualify for homestead and property tax refunds by providing an ITIN on a homestead application. So Section 2 is just one of those clarifying changes related to the ITIN provision. Section 3 exempts from property taxes approximately 35 parcels of land owned by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe in Cass County. These parcels had been considered exempt, but have since had their applications denied because the tribe is not a 501c3. This provision would reestablish their exemption and provide a refund of any state general tax paid in 2020 and 2021. Section 4 of Article 7 adds grandparent, stepparent, stepchild, uncle, aunt, nephew, and niece to the list of qualifying relatives for ag relative homestead. This change would align the qualifying relative lists for ag relative homesteads and residential relative homesteads. Section 5 is just a cross-reference update to a manufactured home park change that we'll go over in Section 13. Section 6 moves the homestead occupancy and application deadlines to December 31st. Under current law, a property owner would need to occupy a property by December 1st and then apply for homestead by December 15th in order to qualify for the following taxes payable year. Section 7 has two different provisions. One is just a conforming change related to the homestead deadline that I mentioned in Section 6. And the second provision is the provision related to the ITINs that I mentioned in Section 1 that would allow a person to use an ITIN to qualify for homestead. Sections 8, 9, 10, and 11 are all conforming changes related to the ITIN provision. Section 12 of Article 7 provides that when a parcel has at least 20 acres and is enrolled in SFIA, and the parcel has been improved with a structure, that the number of acres that are assigned to that to the split classified parcel is the greater of 3 or the number of acres that are excluded from SFIA because there is a structure on the land. Section 13 contains two provisions as well. The first provision would consolidate all of the manufactured home park classifications and set the class rate for all of those classes of property at 0.75%. This section would also set the first tier limit for 4D property at $174,000 for assessment year 2022 and assessment year 2023. And that is the level that it is currently at for assessment year 2021. So it would just lock in that tier rate for the next two assessment years after this one. Section 14 moves the application deadline for the Disabled Veterans Homestead Market Value Exclusion to December 31st, and this is to match the homestead application deadline change that was in Section 6. Section 15 is another conforming change related to the ITIN provision. Section 16 is a provision that Chair Marquardt mentioned in his introduction. This reduces the state general levy by about $20 million to make sure that the increased exclusion in the following section does not result in any shifting in the state general tax. And Section 17 is the increase in the commercial industrial market value that's excluded from the state general tax. So under current law, the first $100,000 of market value is excluded from the tax, and this provision would increase that to the first $150,000 of market value. Section 18 requires counties and cities with a population of at least 500 to publicly post budget information and hold a public meeting on their budget and proposed property tax levy prior to setting that proposed levy. Section 19 contains two provisions. The first would require fire protection special taxing districts, which are established later in this article, to hold annual truth and taxation hearings on their proposed levies in the fall. And then this section would also remove the requirement to hold these hearings for counties, cities with a population of at least 500 and school districts. Instead, these jurisdictions would be required to hold a different public meeting that gets established in Section 21. Section 20 adds a supplemental statement to the notice of proposed property taxes that are mailed out to taxpayers in November. This supplemental statement would add three pieces of information. One would be the percent change in levy for the city, county, township, or school district. The second addition would be some summary budget information for the city, county, and school district. And this statement would also have to have information on where taxpayers can find information on the proposed budget and information on how to participate in the new public hearings that are established in the next section. So Section 21 of Article 7 establishes a new annual meeting for the public to provide input on proposed property tax levies for counties, cities with a population of at least 500, and school districts. So these meetings would all need to be held on the same day, and that would be the first Wednesday following the first Monday in December. The public would be allowed to participate in person or remotely in these meetings. The counties would begin their meetings at 6, the cities at 7, and the school districts at 8, and the public would be allowed to speak no later than 20 minutes after the start of each jurisdiction's meeting. Sections 22 and 24 would allow local jurisdictions to establish special taxing districts to provide fire protection and emergency medical services. Once a jurisdiction had established one of these districts, the district would be governed by a board and have the authority to levy property taxes and issue debt. There are also provisions within these sections that outline how liabilities and assets would be distributed if the districts were dissolved and how jurisdictions can join or withdraw from these districts. Jumping back one section to Section 23, that was just another conforming change related to the ITIN provision. Sections 25 and 26 would authorize cities to impose a special assessment for energy improvement projects. Section 27 provides that land that had been split classified using the current method for ag land while enrolled in SFIA is not in violation of the SFIA program. And finally, Section 28 repeals two sections of statute that define Class 1 manufactured home parks. Because of the changes made in Section 13 related to manufactured home parks, these definitions are no longer needed. Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 7, and I will wrap up with Article 8, the Aids and Credits article.
Very good. Please proceed.
So Sections 1 and 2 of Article 8 provide some additional local government aid to three cities for 5 years. So Section 1 would provide an additional $250,000 per year for 5 years to the city of Floodwood. And the cities of Staples and Warren would receive an extra $320,000 per year for 5 years in LGA. And then in Section 2, there's an increase in the overall appropriation for LGA to cover these increases in Section 1. But after 5 years, the overall LGA appropriation would return to the current level. And these LGA increases are in the same amounts that that these three cities presented to the legislature this year for some local option sales tax projects. Section 3 of this article transfers the portion of county program aid that's designated to cover public defender costs to the Board of Public Defense, rather than first routing that money through the Commissioner of Management and Budget. Section 4 is the new state aid that the chair mentioned in his introduction. This is the state aid to counties that can be used to fund family homeless prevention and assistance projects and programs. So distributions to counties would be based on a 3-year rolling average of each county's percentage share of students experiencing homelessness. The aid would be administered by the Department of Revenue and would distribute $25 million annually. There's a provision within the section that would sunset this aid after 8 years. Finally, Section 5 of Article 8 would provide an appropriation in fiscal year 2022 of just under $70 million to be used, distributed to counties to be used for grants. So of this amount, $63 million would go to all 87 counties on a per capita basis to be used for grants to local businesses that have been impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. An additional $2 million would go to Lake of the Woods County for grants to businesses located in the northwest angle. And finally, $4.75 million would go to Hennepin County for damage remediation grants to remediate the effects of fires and vandalism that occurred during the unrest in the city of Minneapolis and surrounding areas last summer. Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 8 in this section.
Thank you very much, Mr. Swanson. Are there any questions on Articles 6, 7, or 8 from members? Okay, thank you, Mr. Swanson. We will now go to kind of our fourth block out of five, Articles 9, 10, and 11, and we'll start with Ms. Hagler for Article 9.
Mr. Scheer and members, Article 9 contains all of the local sales tax provisions from the division report. Sections 1 and 2 make changes to existing special local taxes in the cities of Plymouth and Sartell. Section 1 extends the expiration on the local lodging tax in Plymouth until a date determined by the City Council when the amounts received from the tax are sufficient to pay any bonds that are issued before January 1st, 2022. And Section 2 removes the expiration date from the food and beverage tax imposed by the City of Sartell. The division heard many local sales tax bills this year, and Sections 3 through 19 are authorizing all of these new local sales taxes. And the next ones that I'll describe are different from the way that they were heard in the original bill, so I'll just describe them as they are changed. For the City of Edina, Section 5 authorizes the tax for two projects, the Fred Richards and Braemar Park development projects. For the City of Hermantown, Section 8 authorizes the tax for two projects, the upgrades to the hockey arena and the construction of the Hermantown Proctor Trail. For the City of St. Cloud, Section 16 authorizes the tax for one project, the improvements to the athletic complex. And in the City of Waite Park, Section 19 authorizes the tax for two projects, the construction of a public safety facility and construction of regional trail connections. The remainder of this article for the cities of Wadena, St. Peter, Oakdale, Moorhead, Maple Grove, Little Falls, Litchfield, Grand Rapids, Fergus Falls, and Cloquet, and the counties of Itasca and Carlton, the provisions in this article are as the division heard them and their original bills with incorporation of any amendments that were adopted. And as Mr. Swanson indicated in his discussion of Article 8, the cities of Floodwood, Staples, and Warren were granted additional LGA appropriations instead of being granted local option sales taxes as originally presented to the division. And that concludes Article 9.
Thank you very much. Please proceed with Article 10.
Article 10, Mr. Chair, contains the tax increment financing provisions. Sections 1 through 4 contain flexibility provisions. Section 1 allows unencumbered increment to be transferred to a municipality's general fund or to a business affected by COVID-19. It requires a municipality electing to make the transfer to adopt a spending plan on any increment they intend to transfer on how the increment will be spent, and requires the municipality to hold a public hearing to discuss the transfer of increment. The municipality must also send copies of the spending plan to the state auditor, and transfers may only be made through December 31, 2022. Section 2 expands the allowable amount of increment that a city can elect to use on affordable housing from 10% to 25%, and allows for the transfer of increment to an affordable housing trust fund. Any transfers made would be considered in-district expenditures under the TIF pooling rules, And lastly, this section expands the types of housing projects eligible for housing development to include owner-occupied affordable housing projects. Section 3 extends permanently the 5-year rule to 10 years for all redevelopment districts that are certified in 2018 and on. And just as a little refresher, the 5-year rule requires that development activity for a district be finished within the district's first 5 years after certification. And Section 4 of this article makes a corresponding extension of the 6-year rule to an 11-year rule, and this rule just requires that beginning in the district's 6th year, increment may only be used to pay off existing debt obligations incurred during the first 5 years of development. Sections 5 through 15 are city-specific TIF provisions that came before the division for the cities of Bloomington, Burnsville, Fridley, Minnetonka, Mountain Lake, Richfield, St. Louis Park, Wayzata, and Windham, and there were no changes made from how they were heard in division. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 10, and Mr. Clayman will discuss Article 11.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hagler. Mr. Clayman, Article 11.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 11 is the public finance article. Now, this is from the division report. Article 1 would allow the county transportation sales taxes to be used to pay for capital costs for facilities that are used to maintain transit projects. Section 2 would allow municipal gas agencies to engage in electric prepayment transactions. Section 3 is just a conforming change related to Section 2. Section 4 clarifies the limits for including installment contracts in the calculation of net municipal debt. Section 5 deletes some outdated language and other current terminology related to the limits on municipal debt rates. Section 6 allows street reconstruction bonds to be used for bike lanes, sidewalks, and other paths that are incidental to the particular road project. Section 7 just provides conforming changes that are related to those changes in Section 5. Section 8 updates and clarifies updates and clarifies permitted investments for the escrow accounts for refunding bonds. And then Section 9 just repeals some overlapping and contradictory language related to the sale of Port Authority property. And Mr. Chair, that concludes Article 11.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clayman. Any questions from members for Articles 9, 10, or 11? All right, I don't see any. Mr. Clayman, thank you. So the last block is going to be Articles 12 through 18. That will finish things off. So Mr. Williams.
Chair Marquardt and members, I'm going to begin by discussing Article 12. That's the Tax Expenditure Review Article. Section 1 of the bill or of the article establishes a requirement that bills establishing new tax expenditures or creating or renewing tax expenditures must sunset after 8 years. Section 2 of the bill is language allowing the Legislative Budget Office to staff the Tax Expenditure Review Commission that the bill is establishing. Section 3 is the tax expenditure is language just establishing the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, describing its membership and duties, and that was the same as the bill was heard in committee previously. Section 4 is language related to data disclosure. It just kind of, it's a section of law that describes instances where the Department of Revenue may disclose data to other state agencies. So it's just adding the data disclosure requirements related to the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. Section 5 changes the due date for the tax expenditure budget. Section 6 expands the contents of the tax expenditure budget. It requires the budget to include purpose statements for tax expenditures to the extent that they've been established, the incidence of the tax expenditures, and then the revenue neutral amount by which the relevant tax rate could be reduced. Section 7 defines terms used in the tax expenditure report, and that relates to sort of changes in the tax expenditure budget. They're sort of allowed to provide more detailed data on only certain smaller tax expenditures. So this sort of outlines which tax expenditures will have less data associated with them. Section 8 changes the due date for the tax incidence study. And then sections 9 through 15 are established in a section, it established with Minnesota Statute Section 3.192, which requires all bills creating, renewing, or continuing a tax expenditure to include a purpose statement. So this is a bill that Representative Abaje carried, and we heard in committee earlier, establishing tax expenditure purpose statements for previous omnibus tax bills. If you look at section 10 of that of this article, it also includes purpose statements for the tax expenditures that are included in this this omnibus tax bill. Section 16 of that article is an appropriations section. So it appropriates $32,000 to the Legislative Coordinating Commission in 2021 for the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, then $766,000 to the Legislative Coordinating Commission in 2022. And then the Department of Revenue has appropriated $148,000 in 2023. I'm going to move on now to Article 13, which is the miscellaneous article. Section 1 of that article is relates to Chair Marquardt's taxpayer receipt bill. That bill is sort of establishing the taxpayer receipt. It requires the Minnesota Management and Budget Agency to establish a web-based interactive taxpayer receipt. Section 2 relates to the June accelerated changes in the bill. So the bill would reduce the percentage of the accelerated June tax liability remitted by retailers and distributors for sales, cigarette, and tobacco and liquor taxes. And a percentage reduction, or reduction that percentage is triggered when there's a surplus as of the November forecast. So long as it's enough to cover the other allocations with additional revenue that are outlined in current statute. Section also requires the bill to reduce the percentage until it equals zero, and then the requirement for accelerated tax remittance is sunsetted. And after the Commissioner of MMB makes a determination that a reduction in the percentage is appropriate, the Commissioner of Revenue must certify the percentage determined each year by March 1st. There's going to be several other sections related to this that are sort of conforming changes. I'll point those out as we go. Section 3 is the bill related to revenue recapture that we heard earlier, which forbids public hospitals who lease their buildings from the county or city in which they're located from participating in the revenue recapture building program. This is modified from the bill we heard in committee, and that ambulance services are not included. Section 4 relates to the taxpayer receipt that I described earlier, so that just requires the Department of Revenue to provide notice to taxpayers that they can opt in to receiving information about that receipt. Sections 5 and 6 are conforming changes related to that June accelerated provision I just described. Section 7 relates to the homestead credit refund, increases the maximum refunds for recipients of that credit by $250 for most filers. Section 8 is the renter's credit section, so that reduces the statutory co-pays for recipients of the renter's credit. Section 9 relates to the stadium reserve. That bill caps the reserve amount at $100 million, which limits the amount of corporate franchise tax revenue that would be transferred into the reserve account. Section 10 is a conforming change related to the June accelerated provision for tobacco taxes. Section 11 establishes a new account for tobacco use cessation. It appropriates $15 million annually raised by the cigarette taxes into that account. Section 12 is another conforming change related to the June accelerated provision. Then sections 13 through 22 relate to tourism improvement districts. So it establishes a new chapter of law to authorize tourism improvement districts. Districts may only be formed by petition of a majority of business owners who would be subject to the charges. Tourism improvement districts only apply to lodging businesses. A city, county, or town may establish a tourism improvement district and collect service charges for tourism promotion and other activities in the district. Additional services provided would be determined by a tourism improvement association made up of owners subject to the same service charges in the district. The tourism improvement district provisions also establish notice, hearing, objection, modification, and disestablishment requirements and rules. Section 23 of the bill establishes a new account related to workforce and affordable housing development. And then appropriates $15 million from the mortgage registry tax in fiscal years 2022 to 2029 to that account. Section 24 of the article requires a report on from the Department of Revenue on Class 4D affordable housing property. Section 25 of the bill reduces the budget reserve by $150 million on July 1, 2021. Section 26 is a fire remediation grant section. So there's grants to the cities of Melrose and Alexandria The grant to Melrose is $643,729, and the grant to Alexandria is $120,000. Section 27 requires the Department of Revenue to produce a report on free filing options and appropriates funds to complete that report. Section 28 contains appropriations for the taxpayer receipt, so $100,000 is appropriate to Minnesota Management and Budget in 2022, and $19,000 is appropriated to the Department of Revenue in 2022, and the base amounts for those appropriations are reduced in the out years. Section 29 is a section related to federal funds replacement. Essentially says that if the Minnesota Management and Budget determines that funds appropriated by the Act may be paid for using funds that were provided by Congress and the American Rescue Plan Act, then the commissioner must use those ARPA funds and then cancel the appropriations in the bill to the general fund. And finally, Articles 14 through 18 are the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill. These are as we heard them in committee, so I won't walk through them in any detail. The only change I'd highlight is the provision related to casualty and theft losses and the itemized deduction for them. Mr. Klayman discussed that previously. It was moved into the income article because that provision has a cost. And that concludes the walkthrough of Articles 12 through 18.
All right, very good. So before we go to the spreadsheet, any questions on Articles 12 through 18? Mr. Williams, thank you so much for that presentation. All right, so we will now move to the spreadsheet, Ms. Templin, Ms. Schill. And so if you would kind of cover the highlights, if you will.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I am sharing my screen showing the House File 991 spreadsheet, the tracking sheet. My colleague Kathy Schill and I will walk through the 14-page spreadsheet. I will cover the first 8 pages, and Ms. Schill will cover pages 9 through 14. Starting on the summary page of the spreadsheet, lines 1 and 2 just are provided for reference. They show current law general fund tax revenues and current law property tax expenditures in the budget window. Lines 5 through 8 show the changes made in the bill to general fund tax revenues on line 6 and general fund property tax refunds and expenditures on line 7. Line 8 is the total changes made in House File 991, the net changes. You can see in the fiscal 22-23 biennium, there is a bottom line change of $4,000. And in fiscal 24 and 25, the estimated change is a revenue gain of $457.2 million. Moving on, lines 10 through 13 show the reduction to the budget reserve account of $150 million in fiscal 22. And lines 15 through 19 show the stadium reserve cap and the amount that would be in the stadium reserve account with this cap is shown on line 19. And then lines 21 through 31 show provisions that have non-general fund impact. This is just the summary. Moving on. On pages 2 through 6 of the spreadsheet show a lot of detail for federal conformity changes. I will get to those in a minute, but I want to start out by just reminding members that positive numbers on this spreadsheet reflect revenue gains and negative numbers reflect revenue reductions. So I'd like to direct your attention to line 3 of the spreadsheet and 4. These lines show the total general fund or the total estimated general fund changes contained in the bill relative to current law for federal conformity and for all other non-conformity provisions. Line 5 shows the total net changes contained in the bill. As you can see, $159.6 million is the estimated revenue gain in the fiscal 22-23 biennium, and $610.7 million is the estimated revenue gain in the 24-25 biennium. Now, jumping back to federal conformity, the sections, federal conformity section goes through pages 2, 3, and 6, and there's a lot of detail here again. And one provision that I just want to bring your attention to is the Paycheck Protection, our PPP loan exclusion that is capped at $350,000. Representative, our Chair Marquardt did mention the cost, and you can see it here on line 21. It has an estimated revenue reduction of $240.6 million in 22 and 23, and $27 million in 24 and 25. So I'm going to jump through these sections. You can see the cost of the various federal conformity extenders and charitable rule changes for the various acts. I'm going to jump right to the total cost of federal conformity that is contained in House File 991. It is shown on line 142 on page 6. You can see there the estimated revenue reductions for all of the changes is $378.1 million in fiscal 22 and 23, and $58.1 million in 24 and 25. Starting on line 144, we have non-conformity changes. Line 146 starts the individual income tax changes made in the bill. Line 147 shows the fifth tier at 11.15% and the estimated revenue gain for that change of $563.6 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $478.1 million in fiscal 24 and 25. Line 148 of the spreadsheet shows the Section 965 repatriation provision. This is similar to the governor's proposal, except in House File 991, it is effective prospectively, and you can see the revenue gain on line 148. Well, line 149 shows the unemployment or UI benefit subtraction of up to $10,200, effective for tax year 20 only. That has a estimated revenue reduction of $259.7 million in fiscal 22 and 23 only. Line 150 is the angel tax credit. That's similar to the cost carried on the spreadsheet, is similar to what was heard in committee, except it's a one-year extension for the angel tax credit for tax year 22 only. Lines 151 and there's two lines 151. They those provisions are the same as what was heard in committee. So the revenue impact is the same. Again, what's carried in on the spreadsheet is the same as what was heard in committee. Line 153 through 155 are the cost of the working family credit changes. In total, all three of those provisions have a revenue reduction of about $59.1 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and 50.1 million in fiscal 24 and 25. Line 156 of the spreadsheet is the refund, tax credit for film production costs. This is a capped allocation. The spreadsheet carries a different number from what was heard in committee. It is a capped allocation of $10 million per year over 4 years. Line 157 of the spreadsheet is the same as what was heard in committee for the beginning farmer tax credit. And line 158 is also the same as what was heard in committee, the fiscal impact. There's no changes there. Line 159 is the federal audit multi-tax commission changes that has a revenue impact of $2 million in fiscal 22 and 23 and $3.1 million in the tails. I believe the rest of the spreadsheet is the same as what was heard in committee for income taxes. So that brings us to corporate taxes on line 169 of page 7. lines 171 and 173 are the fiscal impact carried on the spreadsheet is the same as what was heard in committee. On line 174 of the spreadsheet, the historic rehabilitation tax credit, again, the fiscal impact is the same as what was heard in committee, except there is an eight-year sunset. Lines 179 of the spreadsheet, we get into the sales and use tax changes. And line 180 and 181, these two provisions are the same as the spreadsheet carries the same fiscal impact as what was heard in committee for these two provisions. Line 182 of the spreadsheet is the temporary exemption for food service establishments for COVID-related purchases. This has an estimated revenue impact in the fiscal 22-23 biennium of almost $9.5 million. And then line 183 of the spreadsheet, the prepared food to nonprofit organizations. There's the fiscal impact is the same as what was heard in committee. And then on line 184 of the spreadsheet, this is the sales tax, lines 184 through 191 are the sales tax exemptions for construction materials. Line 184 from Representative, this is Representative David's bill that provides the broad exemption for all public safety facilities. And you can see the cost of that provision on 184. And this is what Ms. Hagler referred to as kind of the broader exemption. The other city specific exemptions for public facility construction projects are the costs are shown on lines 182 through 191, and the costs are slightly different from what was heard in committee. In this spreadsheet, you see mostly the retroactive cost carried in the bill, and the prospective costs are not carried because they are included in the with the cost of the broader exemption on line 184. I believe the rest of the sales tax provisions are, the fiscal impact is the same as what was heard in committee. Then moving to an estate tax provision, line 204 of the spreadsheet, this comes from the Property Tax Division report, and this is the relative agricultural determination expanded. This has an unknown fiscal impact. Moving on to state general levy on line 201. This is the state general levy market value exclusion for the first $150,000 of CI. This has a revenue reduction of $30.750 million in fiscal 22-23 and $40.2 million in fiscal 24 and 25. Line 210 is the same as what was carried in the division report. Then moving on to line 213 to cigarette and other tobacco product provisions. Line 214 shows the estimated revenue gain to the general fund with the inclusion of electronic vapor devices that would be subject to the tobacco products tax. This has a revenue gain of $1.8 million. In fiscal 22 and 23, and about $2.9 million in fiscal 24 and 25. The other line 215 of the spreadsheet is the same as what was heard in committee, except a sunset has been added. Line 220 of the spreadsheet to the insurance gross tax premium provision for not admitted surplus lines. The fiscal impact carried in the spreadsheet is again similar, is the same as what was heard in committee. And then finally in the other category, I will just go over the last line 225, the last line. This is the budget priority added for the June accelerated repeal in committee. When this bill was heard at that time, the the requirement for June acceleration, the repeal, just applied to sales tax. But in this bill, in House Bill 991, it expands that repeal for that requirement to tobacco and excise taxes. And there's a note at the bottom of the spreadsheet of what the revenue, the total, I guess, what would be the price tag to repeal all of those taxes if there was a surplus. And that concludes the tax revenue section of the spreadsheet. And my colleague, Ms. Schill, will take over.
Thank you very much, Ms. Templin. And Ms. Schill, you have about 5 minutes. So I have a few announcements to make before we adjourn. So Ms. Schill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Continuing with pages 9 and 10, these are changes to the general fund expenditure for tax refunds, aids, and credits. Remember that positive numbers on these two pages are program expenditures or revenue losses. Negative numbers are cost savings or revenue gains. For the fiscal 22-23 biennium, proposed changes total just under $160 million in increased spending. And for the 24-25 biennium, proposed changes total $153 million. Many items on these two pages were included in the division report, and thus I will highlight only new items with spreadsheet impact. And there are three groupings for this. First, there are a handful of provisions from House File 991, which is the governor's tax recommendations. These have changes reflected on line 4, which is the home credit state refund, the ITIN for eligibility. Lines 13 and 18 are SFIA, Sustainable Forest Investment Act, the 10-acre rule, and the split classification adjustment. Lines 22 and 23 are the public defender county aid adjustment. That's a technical adjustment. And line 37, you'll find state taconite aid, which Mr. Swanson talked about. This is the iron ore bearing material update. Now, I will step back to line 4. That PTR impact has an effect of $1.8 million per year starting in fiscal 23. This group is exactly how the governor proposed it. The second group are several aids to counties and cities. Lines 11 and 24 reflect the local homeless prevention aid to counties at $25 million per year beginning in fiscal 23. And then there are some PTR interactions. This will go on for 8 years. Line 25 is the county relief grants that Mr. Swanson mentioned for local businesses and nonprofits at a one-time appropriation of just under $70 million per year. And lines 26 and 27 reflect the city fire remediation grants for Melrose and Alexandria, just as we heard in committee. The last group is other aids and contains about 5 items. Line 41 is the taxpayer receipt, and this is administration at about $55,000 per year after initial startup costs. Lines 42 through 45 are administrative costs for the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. These are monies for both the Legislative Budget Office and the Department of Revenue at around $950,000 per year, once again, after startup costs, and those will extend out into beyond the budget window. Line 46 is the revenue recapture bill disallowing hospitals. This is a little different than what we heard in committee. This has a cost of $437,000 per year. Line 48 is the general fund appropriation of $15 million per year for the housing trust fund for the HFA's workforce and affordable housing homeownership program. This has a life for 8 years. And then line 49 is the free filing report, one-time expenditure of $175,000 in fiscal 22. Moving to pages 11 and 12, this is a list of non-general fund impacts associated with tax bill changes. For fiscals 22 and 23, 30 million of the total 31 million impact is the housing trust fund appropriation. Moving to pages 13 and 14, this is a list of no-cost changes in the bill, the bulk of which comes from the division report. The new items are shown on lines 1 through 3, including the tax expenditure purpose statements, the Department of Revenue policy and technical bills, and the provision for the American Rescue Plan Act federal funds contingency. Mr. Chair, that concludes the presentation of the spreadsheet.
Ms. Schill, thank you so much. Ms. Templin, thank you so much. For members, any questions on the spreadsheet? And by the way, tomorrow too, if you look, members, if you're looking at the spreadsheet later and you have some questions, we can start tomorrow's meeting with questions. If you don't have it right now, we can certainly come back to that tomorrow. So members, a couple of announcements. Thank you so much, staff, for going over the walkthrough today. Very, very good. And so on Thursday, tomorrow we're going to have testimony. On Thursday, we're going to move the DE1 amendment, do the author's amendment, and then entertain other amendments. There is no 24-hour rule in this committee, but we need those amendments before the committee begins on Thursday, so we can get those posted and to the public. And so, members, knowing there is not a 24-hour limit, be cognizant of staff time. And also, if you have a bill, for example, a bill that was introduced, and you want to offer that as an amendment, you can go ahead and just offer the bill. You don't have to have staff redo it, an amendment. We will, if it gets onto the bill, we'll fix it, make sure it works into the proper article, section number, and so forth. So, like I said, just kind of keep members, keep staff's time in mind as we look ahead to Thursday. And so Thursday, we start at 1, we can go until 5, and then Friday we're going to hear a number of bills also, and we'll start at 1. So, members, thank you so much for your attention today, and we'll come back tomorrow for testimony. And with that, again, thank you, everyone, for putting this together. And with that, members, we are adjourned.